Hey, it's hot and cold Saturday morning. Good morning, I'm Tom. And it's raining. Surprise! Mr. Gomer Pyle, surprise! It's raining again. My wife, being the smart person that she is, comes up with stuff that I would never think of. And she laid this one on me early in the week, and it is held true for the entire week. And anybody I've told this to has said, wow, that is brilliant. And it's this. May 4th. Tomorrow's May 5th. Today's Cuatro de Mayo. Tomorrow's Cinco de Mayo. It's springtime. It is springtime. We know it's springtime. I hear the birds out there. I hear the peepers, and it is springtime. My wife came up with this, okay? It's not springtime. It's warm winter. Huh? Does that work? I think so. Warm winter. That's the new springtime in Maine. Okay. At least this year. Man, you know, and I laid this one on her last night because I, as a student of science and technology and the rest, we've had this relatively cool springtime. Not too abnormal, but certainly abnormal. And I said to her last night, and this did nothing but chagrin and dismay her, that we're going to pay the price for this. And the price we're going to pay is going to be a hot summer. With God as my witness, right here, okay? We tend to average out. So if we're really relatively cool and below temperature now, we are going to be above temperature come summer. Maybe late spring, late warm winter. So mark my words as I sit here on 8:10 on Saturday morning, Cuatro de Mayo, it's going to happen. I'm just warning you. I mean, you know, you do this radio show for this long, you have some insights. I have some insights. They could be completely wrong, but I do try. So anyway, this week was totally insane. I mean, all my weeks are kind of crazy. This week was totally bonkers. Started with Saturday. It was just a three-ring circus of stuff going on. And then starting on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and ending yesterday, I was rebuilding hybrid batteries every day of the week. So I think I did 7 for the week. The last 2 were for cars that I had gotten in that had bad, had needed battery rebuilds. Excuse me, stammering. It's been a long week. And I did two yesterday, my two cars. I've been ignoring them. Well, I had one that came in. I picked up last week with a bad battery. I drove it down and went into what I call limp mode, where the hybrid system shuts down. I want to tell you that's very exciting when that happens, especially if you're going up a hill. You're doing 21 miles an hour because more than half the power for the car is gone. But it was fun. It used to be when I was not a car dealer, when I didn't work on automobiles, if I bought a car and there was a problem or I just had a problem with the car, I was freaking out. I mean, I was just like frantic. Oh, my God, I'm going to get stuck. And I don't care anymore. Probably because I've got about 30 cars that I could jump into if I need to. But also, before I became a dealer, I got AAA, the tippy-top thing, you know, the coverage. So if and when I got stuck on some car that I picked up that was less than perfect, they'd come bail me out. And that hasn't happened. I haven't been, I got knock on wood, I haven't been stuck in a long time. I've been challenged in some rides, and but it's been so anyway, did all those batteries. It was a good week for that. Did one for a mechanic. That was kind of cool. He had a customer who I did a battery for last week, and this mechanic guy had the problem come up and asked his customer, who was that guy? And that was me. So Anyway, it was that was interesting. But I guess it was after the Three Ring Circus on Saturday, I thought wrongly that I was going to be able to put down the floor that I'd gotten for our new office. I got a vinyl plank floor. For those of you who don't know what vinyl plank is, it's the vinyl floor industry's answer to laminate floors. And it's not a bad answer. And I way back when we were doing the TV show, I did some of the first Pergo floors, I think, probably were ever on TV, at least in the bank. It certainly first time I seen it on TV. And have since done a lot of different laminate floors. And I like them. They're not bad. But they tend to be a little noisy. Either it's a hard surface. They tend to be a little noisy at times. They can have issues with moisture. So the laminate floor, excuse me, the vinyl floor industry came up with a vinyl plank, which is similar in size to a laminate floor that sticks down or sticks together and floats. It depends on the depends on what style of floor it is. So I got one. I shopped for the cheapest one I could find. I said, I just want to try it. I want to see how it works. And one of the things about a vinyl plank is that the color kind of goes through the whole piece. So if you drop something on it and nick it, first of all, it's resilient. So it's got a little bit of give to it. But if you nick it, it doesn't show a different color than the finished surface. So I said, let's try it. So I picked up, I shopped around and a couple of places had them at loss leaders price-wise, very interesting pricing, but they weren't in stock. Thanks, that helps a lot. And I wound up at Home Depot last week, and I picked up what I needed. It was basically about $1 a square foot. And it went down pretty quick. My knees were, I didn't use knee pads. I probably should have. But my knees told me, you know, Tom, you don't want to, you should have knee pads. But it wasn't that big an area, and it looks good. I'm really kind of impressed. I'm not crazy about stick-down vinyl floors, but it seems to have stuck enough that it's okay. I primed the floor before I put it down. And so anyway, we will test it and see what how much abuse I can throw at a floor. I can do a lot. I can damage floors very readily. But it'll be in our new office, so if you do wind up seeing us coming to visit sometime, You can study the floor as well as I will be. Having done the floor, now the office is basically more or less set up. It's set up enough, so we're almost ready to roll there. So that's big doings right there. Although the end of the month has come and gone, we're still probably another we're within a week now of moving out, so it's close. The end is in sight. There are major empty areas in the building, and we're going to clear out the rest today and tomorrow and beginning of the week. So that's like something, except right now I got to take a break because it's 8:16 and I've talked too much. So when we come back, we'll take your phone calls at 1-800-966-1039. It's hot and cold Saturday morning. Stay right there. Okay, we're back. It's 8:21. It's hot and cold Saturday morning. Good morning again. I'm Tom. Phone number is 1-800-966-1039. We got a text line up and running. 601-207-4478. It takes a while. The blood has to get to that part of the brain. 601-207-4478. All right. Hit that button there, and there we go. So what else we got? We got too many cars that aren't ready to sell because I've been moving stuff, and then I went and bought three more cars this week because I can't stop. You know, I find a nice Prius or a nice hybrid, I got to buy it. So I've made a concerted effort where I was working in the shop anyway to try to get some of these things ready to sell because the cars do kind of come and go. It's the kind of the way that whole deal works is to pay the bills. And we got some phone calls, so let's do that. We'll go to the phones, and we got texts. We got a whole deal working here this morning. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Yes, I work on this camp, and it's 2x4 construction. We were wondering about insulating, whether we should use foam or regular batten insulation.
Well, I tell you, I just did a building with 2x4 construction. I took fiberglass out, and I put foam in its place. I cut and fit foam into the cavities, and it for a couple of reasons. I'd used the building, and it was never that easy to heat. It was uncomfortable, and so we cut and fit foam, and eventually, when we get to it, we're going to wrap the outside with another layer of foam, and then strap it and side it or shingle it or something. And the whole idea with the foam is you just get, you know, maybe twice the R value of fiberglass, but more importantly, you don't get wind moving through it. And that's kind of critical.
Okay, that's a spray foam that you're talking about?
No, you could use spray foam. That's more expensive. We used sheet foam and cut it and fit it, which is sweat equity on my part. And I can't say I'm happy about doing it. I grit my teeth and I do it, though, because it does make it brings the cost down to probably a quarter or a third of what it would normally be if you had spray foam put in.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's good to know.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. And what we did in the building, this was an office space that we had from years ago we used, and it had fiberglass in the walls, and it wasn't done very well. We did cap the attic, which made a difference. We had a wood stove in there, and we could heat up the place well with the wood stove, but it was only a small building. It's like, I think 16 by 24, something like that. Not a big building. So what we did in the process is we gutted it. We took everything out. We left the roof because we had insulated that with cellulose. Took out the wood stove. We've insulated all the walls. We've cut and fit foam. We've sealed all the edges of the foam before we put we put OSB up on the walls and painted it. It's what it is. I hate sheetrock, so I didn't do it. And plus, if I have OSB up, I can anywhere I put a fastener in, it's going to stay. It won't pull out. So but the other thing we did was this building was on an uninsulated slab, and we insulated the floor too. And I mentioned this last week. We put an inch and a half of foam down. I could have put more down. Inch and a half was what I had available, and that was adequate. Just to get a thermal break between the concrete slab that was not insulated and where we will be, which is on top of that. So I know this building will heat a lot better. I'm still shopping windows. As a matter of fact, I was at Home Depot this morning looking at windows, and they're not horribly expensive, but they're no cheap date either. So I'm kind of hunting around for a couple of windows. There's some old aluminum framed windows in the building, and the seal it's a double glazed window, and the seal has failed, so they've got to come out. And in the process, now we're going to insulate on the outside of the building. The building is covered with T111, and it's taken the weather, taken hits from the weather over the years. So what we're going to do is at the bottom of the wall, we're going to get a pressure-treated 2x4 and fasten it so it comes out perpendicular, sticks out 3.5 inches. And then we will put 2¾ inches of foam on top of that, covering the whole shell. The whole thermal envelope of the walls now is covered with foam, solid sheets, 4x8 sheets. And then we will strap that with strapping, 1-inch strapping, which is 3/4 of an inch thick. So what's 3/4 and 2¾? 3.5. And then we can put siding over that, or we could put OSB over it, or we could put shingles, whatever we want to do. The idea, though, is at the bottom, the pressure treated, it keeps critters from getting up into the insulation. It doesn't always happen, but if it does, it's not good. So let's prevent it and put it in, and we don't have to worry about it. So that's where we will be. So the windows now, when the windows go in, the two new windows, they'll be smaller than what's there now, but they'll be reasonable size. And they will be framed so they stick out far enough that 3.5 inches. So we'll have to build a box, if you will, maybe out of 2x10s or 12s, that fastens to the framing of the building, but juts the window out adequately. So when we do add the insulation, everything is in the right plane Okay, so the windows are out flush with the outside wall when we're done. This is hard to articulate on the radio, but I think maybe you got the idea. So that's going to happen. Hopefully that'll happen before we're ready to roll, which would mean like this week. Like I do is hunt up the right windows. That's all. Easy. So that's the plan right now. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039, Texas 601-207-4478. Got a text says, I hope your prognostication for a long, hot summer comes to pass. I don't. I want a moderate summer that is pleasant. I was telling my kids when I was a young man, for a while I did lawns down in the glorious state of New Jersey and did gardening. And summertime down there was miserable. My friend Wayne was headed to Florida a couple of weeks ago and stopped in North Carolina and headed back north. He said, at 85 degrees and 85% humidity, he didn't want to go any further. And I can't blame him. That's makes perfect sense to me. So it's a double-edged sword. I don't know about your house, but over at my house, I'm about ready to have to mow the lawn. The grass is green, and the problem I have is I live on the coast, and although it's a little bit cooler than it is up here in Bangor, it seems to me the grass grows faster where I live. And I think I get away with not mowing this weekend, but I will definitely be mowing the lawn next weekend, which just thrills me with great anticipation, because that means that the annual swearing at the lawnmower is about to begin. When I go to the lawnmower and discover it won't start, then when it will start, something breaks, and then something else breaks, and then we get to mow the lawn with a coat on and a hat because it's so godforsakenly cold. But that's what we're going to do. We're going to take a break, though, right now. And when we come back, we'll take your phone calls at 1-800-966-1039 at Texas 601-207-4478. Stay with us, hot and cold. Okay, we're back. It's 8:36 here at the Voice Main. It's hot and cold on Saturday morning. Good morning again. I'm Tom. Just want to tell you about my friend Alan over at General Appliance in Brewer, Center Street in Brewer. Open 9 to 4 Monday through Friday. If you're looking for appliance parts or service, the phone number to call is 989-4341. It's 989-4341. And Alan, you may find this hard to believe, but Alan is running for selectman in Orrington. So if you live in Orrington and if you know Alan, you may not have known this if you lived in Orrington. He's running for selectman. So he told me that, and I said, I'm just going to tell people on the radio. For all the people in Orrington, Maine, Alan's there, and he'll give you probably the same kind of government service that you get at General Appliance, which is great service. Anyway, that's my political ad for the day. there's a reason we don't talk politics. I do so well at it. Anyway, our phone number, 1-800-966-1039. Our text is 601-207-4478. Let's see. There we go. I could deal with that. Yeah. Well, I have to tell you, this just hangs in my head, this song. And the reason it does is I went to a Catholic high school, okay? And it was taught by the Brothers. The Brothers were there. And we had this one brother, Brother Bernardine, who was from Alabama. And he used to like to go around in the hallway. Now, this is back in the, God, this is back in the 60s. I'm dating myself now. I'm sorry. But he would go around in the hallway with a picture of George Wallace and his wife, Lurleen. Remember George Wallace from Alabama? And he has Southern accent. He goes, this is a fine gentleman. This is the governor of Alabama, George and Lurleen Wallace. And you didn't know if he was serious or a fine man. You didn't know if he was serious or not. You couldn't figure him out. But he taught music appreciation. And this is what he would play. He'd come in, he said, boys, you know, if you got your beads, you could get your beads out, say the rosary, while we're listening to this music. and he'd put on Boston Pops. And I loved Boston Pops. So what's not to love? They're playing Leroy Anderson. So he'd whip out the Leroy Anderson album, put it on, and we'd sit there. Nobody had beads. Oh, my goodness. And it made me the person I am today, Brother Bernadine. And he also used to instigate people to go into the library where there was another brother, Brother Berkman. These were old guys. These were older fellows. Brother Berkman's was this rather stern, kind of didn't take any BS from anybody. Bernadine had a sense of humor. Berkman's didn't seem to. And Brother Bernadine said, "Son, I want you to go in the library, talk to Brother Berkman's, and ask him for the History of the Confederacy by Jefferson Davis." This was not the question you go into the library and ask Brother Berkman's for, and he'd throw you out of the library. Those crazy brothers, huh? Hey, our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Our text line is 601-207-4478. The beauty of moving is there is not much fun, except for the fact that all the things that have been missing for months, if not years, suddenly resurface because they fell off a shelf or they fell behind something. And I am accumulating the wonderful missing assets of my business. And the problem is they've been uncovered in the present building. But we're at the point where we just got to get out. So everything gets put in a tote or a box and gets set over in the new building. So I don't know where any of that stuff. I know where the stuff is that was organized, but my goal this weekend is to assimilate all the stuff that has been just not dumped, but boxed. And Pete told me this. And I know you're going to find this hard to believe, but he said, as we get down to the end of this, you seem more and more like a hoarder. And the reason for that is that I have boxes full of big copper cable that one would use in an electric car if one was doing electric or doing a big battery system, maybe a photovoltaic system. And I possibly will never use it. I admit that. But if and when you need, you know, 4-aught cable, if you go to buy it, it costs stupid amounts of money. And he doesn't quite understand that. He's not the electronics person that I am. So when anybody comes in and knows electronics and they see all my cable, man, they say, you know what? This guy's got some juice. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. It texts 601-207-4478. I got a compliment on the music. Thank you. I appreciate that. I have to tell you the Nielsen is Mike Dow's doing. Mike and I were talking and just talking about stuff. And he mentioned Harry Nielsen. I said, oh, there we go. That's how we're starting the show out this morning. And then I was off and running from there. So but I appreciate that. Our phone number, 1-800-966-1039. Our text, 601-207-4478. One of the final things we need to do that we haven't done yet for moving in is some groundwork. It's been so wet where we have put gravel down. It's not too bad because it drains. But we have a few areas where there wasn't enough gravel, and it got kind of smushy because the fines, if you will, have worked up through. And I've watched some folks I know who are fixing driveways and trying to remediate, you know, potholes in the gravel driveway or whatever. And using some nice looking gravel. I mean, you know, I'm becoming a connoisseur of gravel or a crushed stone. It just is nice stuff. The dilemma is when you put down and I never studied civil engineering, but I've talked to civil engineers. If you study soils, there's different soils. Basically, I'm going to really simplify this for the study of soils, and this is a broad brush generalization. But you start with rocks, okay? big, maybe 2-3 inches in diameter and bigger. Huge they could be. Then you go to gravel, which is smaller, maybe inch or two and smaller down to, I don't know, quarter inch, maybe eighth inch. Then it becomes sand, okay? Then it becomes silt, and then it becomes clay. And, of course, big particles allow water to pass right through. Big rocks, you know, you got a pile of big rocks, you pour water on it, just goes, comes out the bottom. Same thing with gravel. When you start to get into silt, it's a little bit finer. And when you get into clay, it can just stick together and not let water pass through. So if you have a mud hole in your driveway and you're going to put gravel down on top of it, what will happen over time is the fine materials will work their way up through the gravel as the gravel sinks down, and you wind up with a gravelly mud hole. So the fortunate part of the usual routine is to dig it all out, put a lot of gravel down, and get it up in the air so it can continue to drain. But even that, over time, you'll have fines kind of work their way up through. It may take years, but it could happen. The saving grace here is what we call geotextiles. And you see this when they do roads today. It's a woven, or not woven, but spun plastic that's permeable, so water can pass through. It's kind of like a filter. That gets put down, and it might be in 6 foot, might be in 20 foot wide rolls. It gets unrolled on top of the native soils, and then gravel gets put on top of that, or some other permeable thing, finish surface. But the fine material can't work its way up through into the gravel because it's got this barrier, as long as it isn't broken. And it's fairly rugged stuff. If you can buy it at and it's similar to the called landscaping fabric you would use in a garden to keep weeds from coming up through. Same deal. It's strong enough that it will resist tearing. You can tear it, but it takes a bit. But it will also allow water to pass through, but won't let mud and those larger particles, larger compared to water, if you will, won't make their way up into the gravel. So I think geotextiles are in my future, too. We'll see when we get in there and start rooting around with the excavator. But that's what that's all about. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Our text is 601-207-4478. The as you try to drain a driveway or a site, geotextiles are very important. If you're doing a drainage tile around the house, you're doing a basement wall, and you want to get water away from that basement wall, the usual routine is to have at the bottom of the wall, have geotextile first on the ground going right up to the wall, some crushed stone, drainage tile, which is perforated pipe. The perforated pipe is wrapped with geotextile to keep stuff from getting in and plugging up the pipe. More crushed stone. And again, we have geotextile segregating the crushed stone or gravel from the soils that are adjacent to the building. So now any water that gets in drops down to the bottom where the drainage pipe is, and that goes out to hopefully daylight. You get downhill away from the building. And that makes a big difference in keeping a basement dry. And, of course, there's, doing stuff to the basement wall to keep it impermeable as well. But we got some phone calls, so let's go back to the phones. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Good morning, Tom. Just want to tell you that different people I talk to say they like to listen to you because you have a lot of good information that people with questions don't have. So don't think you're not being heard. You are. You sound really good, and the music is good, too.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it. Let's see. Let's go over to line two. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hi. I got a question on Anderson window.
Yeah.
Noticed this winter that the windows are about 30 years old, and I have like a oval within the glass. It's like a foggy condensation.
Yep.
Wonder if there's anything that we can do to fix that, or they need to be replaced.
Yeah, you got to replace them. I'm sorry. That's what I've got to do with my windows. I've got exactly the same thing. There's no recourse short of just change. You could, it may be, I've never priced it with Anderson, but it may be less expensive to get the sash replaced than the whole window. But if the windows are 30 years old, it may be easier and less expensive just to get a vinyl replacement window or another, you know, or a similar replacement window that would fit the opening.
Okay.
All right.
Very good.
Okay. Good luck. Bye-bye. Yeah, and you know, if you've never done it, you don't have to hire somebody to, if you can do a little bit of woodworking, you're a little bit handy, you can do replacement windows. The most critical part in doing a replacement window is measuring the opening. You have to make sure you do the opening properly. And it's easy enough to check with the folks you might be getting the windows from to find out how to do that properly. If we have time, we'll talk about it. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine. Hello? Hello? All right. Let's try that again. Number's 1-800-966-1039. We got a text here from Tom up in Sangerville. Nothing like going down the road that got graded a not yet rock rake. Yeah. I was on driveway yesterday. They probably got 8 inches of crushed stone put in, and the traction control was kicking in, and I thought, am I going to make this, or am I just going to dig myself in? It hadn't been rolled, it hadn't been run over enough to compact, and I'm hoping that what was underneath was dense enough that it's not going to work itself up into this beautiful crushed stone. Let's go over to line one again. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, I had a bit of an ice problem.
Yeah, hang on one sec. Could you turn your radio down, please?
Yeah, just a second.
There you go.
Hello?
Hi.
Yeah, I had a bit of an ice problem along my eaves. Mm-hmm. The dustpan section comes off the main roof. I have it on the front and on the back.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm getting ready to shingle the whole house. And I was wondering, it's an old house, 1865.
Mm.
And I'm trying to debate whether I put down blue styrofoam on the roof or strap it and put a layman over the top of that and then vent it to the peak of the roof and put a ridge cap on. What's your suggestion?
I guess you can't get in. It's already insulated under the roof.
Yeah, it's in a kind of a bulkhead wall type of thing. It's an overlayment. It used to be a porch, and then they built out over it, and it's okay. All closed in. It's hard to get up inside. You know, I thought maybe where I was getting ready to shingle the roof, I could put some kind of barrier up on top of it.
Yeah, I would be inclined if I was dealing with this, I'd probably get at least 2 inches of foam down and strap it vertically. Excuse me. And then sheathe over that. So you've got ventilation as well as some extra insulation, because those eave areas are really, you know, under-insulated on most houses, especially if the roof angle is low.
Right. It's so kind of a dustpan affair off the roof on both sides.
Yeah, so I think that would help you a lot in terms of getting away from the problem.
Appreciate your time.
Okay, good luck.
Thank you.
Okay. And I guess I'd be inclined to ice and water shield up maybe 6 feet as well. You know, it's sort of a belt and suspenders and maybe a second belt. And it's not horribly expensive to do that. The foam is expensive, but it will make a difference. So let's see. Over to line two and hit the air. There we go. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine. Hello? Hello? Okay. Phone number is 1-800-966-1039. A text line is 601-207-4478. In the process of cleaning out our office, I have this big cutout I've had in my office for probably 20 years of Frank Sinatra. It was from some kind of special that was on TV many years ago, and at the time we were on Channel 7, and they had this big poster of Frank Sinatra, and they were taking it down. I said, "What are you going to do with that? I'm going to throw it out." I said, "No, can I have that?" Yeah. So I have this. I cut it out, and I had it hanging on the wall in my office for 20 years, Frank Sinatra. I said, "It's time. I think I'll let it go." So I put it in my My neighbor, Nat, next door, I snuck in his shop one day. He had gone out for something and stuck it up on the window. He didn't know who it was. I says, Francis Albert. And you know, he acknowledged that and then said to me later, who is that? I says, Frank Sinatra. How do you, and he's not a young man. I mean, he's not, I could see if you're 20 years old, who's Frank Sinatra? He should know better. It's going to be a quiz on this stuff, you know? Let's go back to the phones. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Good morning. In response to the guy with the Anderson windows, mm-hmm. about 3 years ago, I had 40-year-old Anderson windows, mm-hmm. And I checked with a hardware store, and if you look on the corners of the window, it'll show a number.
Yeah.
And I had to take the trim out on the inside and replace that, but I was able to take the window right out, push it back in, screw it back in, and they're brand new windows, and they're double paned, and it can be done.
And how was it? Was it pricey, or how expensive did you find it to be?
I didn't really price out new windows. I thought it would be easier and better just to take the panes out,
yep.
and take them out.
Yeah,
and everything looks good, and everything's working good.
Yeah, you know, that's the minimalist approach, and it works well. And it, you know, the new Anderson windows are low-E gas filled, so that's all good. Good deal. Thank you.
I thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Yep. Yeah, you should note that if you have any commercial window, including vinyl replacement windows, there's always a serial number somewhere on that window frame, usually in the track area. Sometimes it's on the top or bottom, but usually it's in the track area. And if you can remove the sash, you'll find that number, and if you contact the manufacturer. I know vinyl replacement windows, many times they will replace the glass, and of course glass places will make custom panels as well, that if you're so inclined, you could take it apart or have them take it apart and replace it. Having said all that, for a moment or so before the break, if you're doing something, I had done, when we did our house over, we did a new front door with new side lights, and the side lights were misrepresented to me as being fiberglass. I thought they'd last forever. They were steel. They were leaky. They got taken out, and I built my own side lights. All the outside was a cellular PVC, and I had two side light panes made, insulated glass panels made, I think it was with Portland glass, which I think is something else now. Is it Safe Light? I'm not sure. But most glass places can make these up for you. It was very affordable, and I framed it up, put it in. You do have to have glass sitting on what they call setting blocks, which allow for expansion and contraction because glass is going to move, and you've got to have the right kind of weather stripping or glazing, glazing, not putty, but caulks. But it is doable, and it could be very inexpensive as opposed to I spent a lot of money on those side lights, and I want to tell you, Tom wasn't happy. But let's hit the music because we got to go. We got a break coming up. We come back, we'll take more calls. It's hot and cold Saturday morning. Don't go anywhere. Hey, we're back. It's 9:06. It's hot and cold on Saturday morning. Good morning again. I'm Tom. Cuatro de Mayo. Tomorrow, Cinco de Mayo. You know what that means. It means something. By golly. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. We got the text line up and running, 601-207-4478. And let's do this. Let's turn down we want to turn that down. I don't know. We got some phone calls here. Let's go back to the phones at 1-800-966-1039. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Yeah, good morning, Tom.
Hi.
Spoken to you in the past about a couple of different insulation projects. They're sort of, I'll call them passive in the fact that I'm not trying to prevent the natural flow of air as it would flow based on gravity, but just radiant. Either heating or cooling. This past winter, I had taken a rug up in my living room, and all of a sudden it was colder in there. And I talked to you about insulating under the floor, which I did, and it made about a 5-degree difference in the floor temperature.
Good.
And then one I've spoken with you previously about and haven't executed it yet is that a seasonal home with an open ceiling. I was looking to insulate that ceiling and then cover the roof beams with either V-Match or shiplap pine, and I'm hoping to pull that one off shortly. So my question is, I think I'm going to use rock wall insulation, and in attaching it to the roof, you know, I've come up with a couple of different things, but then I was also wondering about, you know, putting on maybe 3 feet of the wood and then kind of just stuffing it down between that wood covering and the roof. And I didn't know if it made a difference for it to be attached right to the roof or whether it could kind of float on top of the wood that I'm going to cover the beams with. Does that make sense?
Kind of. The problem is when you put a V-match ceiling up is it's just got a lot of holes in it. And the rock wool is not is kind of permeable to air. So the ideal way to do it, which is maybe similar to what you're discussing, would be to, you know, fit it into the cavity. And then I, if it were me, I'd be putting up at least an inch of foam over that on the inside of the room. And then I would strap over that. I would seal the joints between the foam, and you're putting up 4x8 sheets, so you've got 4 feet. And you, if you're using 2x, I mean, you could use the foam to help hold the rock wool in place, and then if you strap over that, sealing the joints of the foam after you strap it, you'd have a very tight ceiling that's not going to cause any issues, and you don't have to worry about using V-match. I can't tell you how many times I've gotten hired to come into houses that have V-match ceilings with some kind of fluffy insulation and nightmarish, I underline that and capitalize it, nightmarish moisture problems that, you know, meant they were undoing something major, like taking the V-match down or going over the V-match with more insulation. It was just like, this has got to be, you know, this is just about as bad as it gets in terms of having a problem like that.
I see. Okay.
You know, you don't have to go crazy with the insulation, the foam, but I would use at least 1 inch, and that doesn't complicate your life too much. It doesn't add.
I'm not looking now to keep heat from escaping. I'm looking to keep the hot roof from radiating.
I understand that, but yeah. My concern is more that there could be a moisture issue down the road that would be nice to prevent from happening before it happens. And V-Match is just notorious for causing these kinds of problems. So the other option would be, if you didn't want to use the foam, which I highly recommend, I don't have any foam to sell, but I highly endorse it, would be a very high-integrity plastic vapor barrier that you could put up incrementally as well to hold the rock wool in place as you're putting it in. It'd take a little bit of orchestration. But you have to seal all those joints anywhere the plastic meet. You know, if you have two pieces together, you would get a butyl caulk to seal that. And it's worth the extra time, excuse me, to not have the problem down the road.
Okay.
All right.
Well, very good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. I don't know if you're going to do it, but that's, you know, it. The problems I have seen related to V-match on a ceiling with fluffy insulation, like I say, are bordering on nightmarish and extraordinarily expensive. And, you know, if it's a seasonal building, a three-season building, if you're dealing with this, if you don't have leakage of water, you're probably going to get some mildew or mold forming over time. Just a caveat, word to the wise. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Yes, I've got a contractor, and I've got a question for the pro.
Yes, sir. Can you turn down your radio, please?
Yep.
Hello?
Yep, no, I did.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, I'm sorry. Contractor, and I've got a question about... other people that have put Tyvek up with 3/8 foil face foam insulation with the vinyl over that.
Yep.
I've always been under the assumption that that kind of backfires and works in the opposite way. Either you have Tyvek or insulation, one or the other. You don't have both. And I'm getting ready to side my house, and I found out that I have that on there, Tyvek and foam, And before I side it again, which I'm hoping for the last time, either before I sell it, I want to do it obviously right.
Yeah. It really doesn't matter if both are there. The Tyvek is there as a wind barrier. The foam is going to be a wind barrier. You're not going to get any moisture passing through one way or the other through the foam. So that it's not necessary to put it up. If it's there, I would leave it. It's not a big deal. It's not hurting anything being there, having both, if that's your concern.
And the other thing was, I've got a raised ranch with the two-car garage that goes under, and above it is my boys' two rooms. And for the longest time when we first moved in, those two rooms were always cold in the wintertime.
Yep.
And I had plumbers tell me that I should rerun one-inch piping in throughout the house. And then I went and re-roofed the house. I don't know if this did it or not, but I re-roofed the house, which it needed. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that did it or not, but all of a sudden the rooms weren't cold anymore. And I obviously looked at my garage ceiling, which is sheetrock, and that's got fiberglass with a layer of Thermax over it for the sheetrock.
Wow. That seems odd that just re-roofing would solve the problem.
Exactly.
But maybe there were some holes there that you mitigated in the process of re-roofing.
Yeah,
maybe things settled in, banging around up there.
Obviously, in your previous call, you had answered you've answered several questions and issues for me, and I like listening to you.
Okay.
And I bank pretty much everything that you say. But there's a residential home that I looked at for a gentleman that had a metal roof on it, the tongue and groove inside.
Yeah.
And you said that pink was an air filter. And the minute I told you that there was icicles coming through the vented soffit outside, you knew exactly what it was.
Yeah.
Your remedy was to spray foam it.
Yeah. Well, you know, the spray foam is, if it's done right, is going to be it's done and it's done. I hate to tell people that because that's the most expensive way to do it, but. You know, dealing with the problem, the moisture problem, that's a very significant issue. So,
well, then that's quite a large job, and why keep chasing a problem?
That's right. That's right. And I think back to one that Dick Hill and I went to look at years ago, and it was a new house. Contractor, the homeowner, and the architect got together, decided the problem was to remove the roof from the outside, brand new house. Took the roof off, architectural shingles, threw them all away, built the roof up another, I don't know, maybe it was 12 inches, put fiberglass in, re-roofed, and guess what? Same problem.
Again.
At this point, they had dropped, this is going back now, they had dropped $30,000 doing this roof over, and it was still a problem. And at that point, you say, well, look, okay, you don't want to have this happen again. You're either covering on the inside or the outside, but you're getting foam in there. And I said, you know, you don't want to do this a third time. I would spray foam it just because it was miserable. And the architect and the builder stepped up. Granted, they dragged the homeowner in for a third of it, which I guess I understand to some degree. But then again, if you got this guy every sunny day had water just gushing out of the eaves and there was a 4-foot icicle on the eave the day we were there because it had, you know, it was cold out. It had frozen in the process of leaking inside and outside the house. It was horrible. And you feel horrible for the homeowner, but you're looking at it, you say, you got to do it again, man. What are you going to do? So
exactly.
Okay.
Hey, have a good weekend.
Thank you.
Thanks for your advice.
You too. Bye-bye. And we got to take a break. It's already that time. It goes quickly when we're having fun. It's hot and cold Saturday morning. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back. It's hot and cold on Saturday morning. That's the Those Darn Accordion Band guys there from the San Francisco. Oh, I want to tell you that came in as a CD many years ago, and I almost fell over when I heard it. Let's see. They did this one too. This is kind of awesome. This I used to play this one a lot. I could play it now, couldn't I? Okay. Anyway, we're back. 9:23. It's hot and cold Saturday morning. I leave that in the background. It's a great song. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Our text line is 601-207-4478. You know, I think what makes this show work is just when I, instead of saying something stupid, I could just play music. And I can still say stupid things. That's my radio show, right? Okay. Are they great or what? Makes me wish I took up the accordion, except I think being dyslexic, I don't think the accordion is the instrument. Somehow the banjo is. I don't know why that is. But back to the phones we go, 1-800-966-1039. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine. Hello?
Yes, good morning. Thank you, Tom, for taking my call.
Sure.
I recently took over management of a family property, and it's a large single-story ranch.
Mm-hmm.
And in the attic space, there's only a bare minimum R19 fiberglass batten.
Yep.
Insulation rolled down. On top of that, I got another issue where the electrical that was originally run was really done in an extremely sloppy manner. There's wires going across the insulation just all over the place. None of it's nailed down. And I was wondering what you thought would be the best way to, one, clean up the electrical, whether it be get it put all onto a backer board somewhere, and then secondly, the best way to improve the R value on top of the batten insulation without removing the existing insulation, if you think that's possible.
Yeah, I think it's probably worthwhile to have an electrician come in and look, you know, rather than have me try to guess over the phone. And it wouldn't necessarily be expensive to have somebody come in and look at it and see what they think. In terms of the insulation, that's fairly simple. I would leave what's there. I would look around for areas where there's not a lot of insulation right now. You can lift it here and there and check for holes that go down into the building and maybe have a couple of cans of foam. On a day like today when it's not going to be hot up there, obviously this is not a July noontime project, but you know, in the fringe months, it's a good time to get up there and just seal all the holes you could find, like where the penetration for the plumbing vent goes up through. That's going to be a hole. Seal those, and then have somebody come in or do it yourself, where you put at least another 12 inches of cellulose on top of what's there. And if there's a hatch, which I assume there is an attic hatch, make an insulated attic hatch with weather stripping that will seal, and that'll make a big difference in the heating cost of the building, and make it more comfortable too.
Great, thank you very much.
Okay, you're welcome. I've gotten to the point in my life where it just makes sense, especially for electrical things, to have somebody come in and look at how things are done. It doesn't take, even if you wind up paying for a half hour, an hour's worth of an electrician's time, to understand what's going on, that they would suggest should be taken care of. Because, you know, similar thing with plumbing, not quite as critical. It may be critical in some ways, but for sake of discussion, somebody's gone in there and plumbed up a bathroom sink or a kitchen sink or a washing machine hookup. The worst thing that's going to happen on the drain end of things is it's going to leak. It's going to drip water somewhere, and you're going to see it. You're going to notice it. You're going to mop it up. You're going to say, oh, that stupid so-and-so did this or that, and that's the end of the conversation. If it's a plumbing leak on a water line, it makes itself evident pretty quick in that they're spewing water. Same deal. You probably take somebody's name in vain, but that's the end of the conversation. With electricity, we have a whole other ball game. We have the ability to kill people instantly. that's always a game changer, if you will, you know. And I having done house inspections and having been into a lot of different things, it's everybody, you know, if you have a little bit of understanding of electricity, you're an electrician. That's not true, but that's what a lot of folks think. And in areas where there isn't a real tight code, that could be a problem. So it doesn't hurt to have somebody come in. You should have somebody online anyway who is your family electrician, somebody you trust, somebody's used them or whatever, that you know they are reasonably priced and do good work. And I'm always kind of impressed when I've gone into houses. I remember years ago there was a local guy who was doing spec houses. I wasn't real excited about him, but one of the things he did was he had different folks that were subs, and I met the electrician somehow, or maybe I was just happened to be on a project and looking at it, and the guy was doing a panel, electrical panel, you know, circuit breaker box. And I looked in that box, and it was like art. It was just beautiful the way it was wired. And I when I've done wiring myself, I try to mimic what this person did. But, you know, a good plumber, a good electrician can do art. And in addition to making it safe, make it look good. And you know, it shouldn't be sloppy looking. If it's sloppy looking, you then have to question what's going on. And chances are things are not done right. I had a building we used to be in, about 8 years ago we were in this building. All the outlets were wired backwards. If you look at an electric outlet face on, it's got three prongs. Okay, the bottom roundish prong is a ground lug, right? The one on your right, which is shorter, is what we call the hot lead. And the one on your left, which is bigger, taller, is the neutral. Those were all reversed. The ground was the ground. That was done right. But the hot lead and neutral were all reversed. So it's a matter, and the wires were crossed at the outlet. So that meant that every outlet, and there were a lot of outlets, had to be taken out and rewired. And sometimes that wreaks havoc. So fortunately, a lot of times it doesn't cause major problems, but it can. And it's a potential shock hazard, and it was a real mess. This was a big building, and every outlet was backwards, and you can't let that stand. You got to fix it, and that's why I don't know who wired it. I would assume it was not an electrician. That's electrical work 101. Any electrician who did that should be taken off the job immediately. So I don't think that was the case. That an electrician did that. Some do-it-yourselfer did, and just like, come on, get with the program. Speaking of the program, we're going to take another break. It's 9:31 here at the Voice of Maine. It's hot and cold. Saturday morning, last break of the hour. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. It's 9:35 here at the Voice of Maine. It's hot and cold Saturday morning. The phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Let's go right back to the phones. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Yeah, Tom. Hi.
Hi.
Talking about plugs. When I had my house built, I had hospital plugs installed. They were tighter.
Mm-hmm.
They were from an electrical supply store. The three prong plug. The way you were explaining it, the post was on top, or was it on the bottom? You know, that third. The third post.
The round one?
The ground.
The ground would usually be on the bottom.
Is the ground that single post that goes in?
It's kind of in the center.
This is on top. It's a three-prong plug.
Okay.
Two prongs are on the bottom, and the third one's on top, right?
Okay. Not normally. Normally it's the other way around. The two
normally
slots.
It's on the bottom.
Okay,
I think there's two thoughts on that with electricians. Some electricians, I think that post should be on top.
Okay.
When I was building the house, there was a little confusion in that. That what side should that? What is the easier way for that to be? That, and I'm still confused.
Well, I don't think it really matters that much, but I, you know, my routine is it goes on the bottom, Anytime I see any graphic that shows that sort of thing, that ground lug, if you will, is always on the bottom of the outlet. Maybe an electrician out there in Radio Land has a comment to make in terms of where that should be. I'm not going to make a determination other than if I'm putting one in, it's going on the bottom. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. The text is, 601-207-4478. We haven't heard from Pete this morning yet. By the way, he knew he was going to be busy this morning, but their yard sale is going on today. Today is the last day of the moving yard sale. Anything that doesn't sell is probably going to my buddy Kurt, who will store it forever in his hot and cold American Solar Technics junk museum. So for what that's worth, back to the phones we go. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Yeah, Tom. I understand the reason that they've changed it now and they're putting the ground on the top is in case something fell off and hit it. It's not going to cross against the leaves. It's going to hit on the ground first.
Okay. I'm still... okay.
That's just why they explained it to me, because I've always been ground on bottom all my life.
Yep. Okay. Thank you. I'm still... I mean, if it's plugged in... I could see that, but that's what arc faults are for too, aren't they? Code has no preference on ground location. Master electrician told me when I had this question. Okay. Thank you. There was a text message just came in. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Yes, with your dilemma with where to put the ground. I had an electrician tell me once to put the ground hole on top, because when you pull it out, typically – it's lower than, you know, you're reaching down and you're pulling up on it. So the last thing that will have contact will be the ground plug.
Okay.
Follow me?
I do. I'm not sure it makes sense to me, but I can appreciate it. I've never had an issue where I've shorted something out or lifted myself unplugging or plugging a plug in.
Well, he was talking super paranoid safety.
I guess so. Thank you. I appreciate the call. We got another text message here. Says Boston, Mass. There we go, Mr. Man. We're talking bureaucracy now. Boston, Mass. Electrical code says ground prong needs to be on top. Most everywhere else is optional where you put it. Okay. Well, I'm putting it on the bottom. I'm just old fashioned. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine. Go ahead.
Morning. Morning, hi. Tom. How you doing?
Good.
Good. One more opinion weighing in on the ground top or bottom dilemma that we have going here this morning.
Sure.
Something I've noticed in a bunch of rentals that I've dealt with, very often the ground would be on top on a switched circuit, ground on bottom on an always live circuit. Now, I don't know if it's code or if it's just a practice that some guys do, but I have specifically noticed that for years.
I like that concept, just because now you know if it's switched or not just by looking at the outlet.
Right.
That's
If I'm rewiring a switched circuit, that's what I do, because I've seen it. I'm guessing it's not code, but it is something that's out there.
Yeah.
So one more opinion in the fray.
Have a good weekend, Tom. Fuzzy. Thank you. I appreciate your call. That's interesting. I like that whole idea. I might do that. Let's go over to line one. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hey, Tom. How's it going?
Good.
Hey, okay. Let me try to nail down a little logic here.
Sure.
If you look at a wall pack, people, you know, whether it's a wall pack or a plug, a lot of traditional plugs, you know, to plug it in if it's got three prongs and the wire's trailing off the bottom. I mean, it's just, you know, what's so hard about figuring that out?
Mm.
Yeah. Somebody might do it different, but if they come up with their own way of doing it, how does the next guy know that they, you know, came up with their own little brainstorm? So I think, you know, like you said, you look at it, it should look like a face, you know, two eyes and a nose. Just keep that in mind and go with it.
Yeah.
You know, man, people got to make this so complicated. It's just cut and dry.
Yeah, I agree.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye. All right, we got a couple more texts that have come in. How about left or right? That's a good point. I have an old house. LOL. Good stuff. Let's see. This is an unrelated outlet question. have a full foundation, 8-foot ceiling for one quarter of it. Three quarters of it has a 3-foot tall ledge. Oh, I'm looking to seal the ledge because water runs right out of it. Looking for recommendations. I'm not sure. I three quarters of it. I'm a little confused. That I'm assuming it's got a. Oh, okay, I got you. It's a tough one. The one thing that might work is something like spray foam. A higher density spray foam might help to seal it, and then probably intercept it if that don't work. But I've had good success with seepage, not with flowing water, with spray foam. So maybe that'll help you there. Let's go back over to line one. Good morning. You're on The Voice of Maine.
Hey, good morning, Tom.
Hi.
I may as well belabor the ground.
Yeah, fine.
Situation, but put mine on top, and you should appreciate it because in a shop,
mm-hmm.
I had a piece of metal fall down once right along the plug where it's plugged in.
Yep.
Where the ground is not on the top.
Yep.
And it shorts right out across the two prongs.
Yeah.
And so it can't happen with the ground fault on top. So
right.
Just keep belaboring it.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Yep.
Take care.
Yeah. You know, I've thought of that. I've been paranoid about it. I've never had it happen. And I think that's what circuit breakers are for. Granted, we don't want to throw sparks around, and sometimes circuit breakers don't work. And I think in a residential application, you've got arc fault circuit breakers and or GFIs. So I'm not sure it's that big a deal. I'm intrigued that the Boston code says it should be upside down from what many of us are thinking it should be. That's kind of an interesting dilemma, though. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Our text is 601-207-4478. If you'd like to call in this morning, or text in, excuse me. And let's go back over to line one. Good morning. You're on The Voice of Maine.
Hi. Got one more input on the problem.
Sure.
I guess not a problem. I'm a contractor. I'm not an electrician, but I've been around enough electricians.
Sure.
But I did ask that question one day.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me, don't make a damn bit of difference. But the only advantage is when you plug a plug in with a hole on the bottom, it'll tend to keep the plug from falling out. It gives it a little more leverage. That's the only explanation I ever got.
Hmm. That's interesting.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
But there you go.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Let's see. Oh, we lost the other call. Let me bring that microphone up there and give the phone number again, 1-800-966-1039. The text line is 601-207-4478. I've been doing, house stuff for a long time. And I think when we were doing the house we're in now, which is now 16, 17 years ago, it was before that even. We bought a big shop vac, a rigid shop vac from Home Depot, and it's given up its ghost after 16 years of heavy, heavy, heavy lifting use. I mean, I use it for everything. We use it wet vac, dry vac. It is used a lot. And the motor is probably repairable. Those motors are a series wound motor, and they have brushes that could be replaced. But it's kind of beat. So I went out and bought a new vacuum this morning, and I shopped it hard. I went to Home Depot and kind of choked when I looked at the price of vacuums. I mean, the similar one that I have now, I think it was $179, and I'm rough on vacuums, and I'm not sure $179 makes sense. So I wound up with a shop vac, which was smaller. It was only 5 gallon. What I have, I think, is 10 or 15 gallon for a fraction of that. And it'll make me empty the thing a little bit more, but I never fill it. It's never been filled. So anyway, let's go back to phones. We got plenty of calls here. Good morning. You're on The Voice of Maine.
Yes. On the electrical outlet thing.
Yes, sir.
If you're ever so lucky enough to sit in the doctor's office and have nothing better to do than look around,
yeah.
All the outlets are upside down.
Are they? Okay. Well, that's the caller who started this said he had the hospital outlets, and I have thinking about it now, I have noticed they're upside down, and I guess people who go to the doctor are less safe more prone to getting electrocuted, and maybe that's it.
Well, I have noticed that sitting in enough doctor's offices.
Well, you know, it could be that the call here is that the insurance companies are forcing it. You know?
Who knows?
Okay. All right. Thank you for your call.
Have a good day.
I see you. Bye-bye. Interesting. The plot thickens. Good morning. You're on The Voice of Maine.
Hi.
Hi.
Not to belabor this whole ground deal.
Yeah.
The Navy, in their ships, the ground has to be at the top, and it's because it's a safety issue.
Mm-hmm.
Believe it or not, I have a story. My mother dropped a coat hanger on a slightly pulled-out plug with the ground on the bottom, and it made a huge amount of noise, bang, crash, back in the 60s,
mm-hmm.
before ground faults. So it is a safety issue. If you put the ground at the top, you will never have that happen.
Yeah.
And so, safety issue.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Plot thickens. Just tuned in, so this maybe already have been said, but the reason it's recommended you put the ground on top, theory, you pull the cord out of the plug, the ground will be the last thing touching, so no point in time when you disconnect the plug, you have an ungrounded situation. Okay. Then we got a phone call. Go figure. Good morning. You're on The Voice of Maine.
Morning, Tom.
Hi.
I recently worked on an apartment building in central Maine.
Mm-hmm.
The old two-wire system, so there is no way to ground it.
That's true, yeah. Yep.
It seems safe enough, but you know, you're putting in new plugs, and there's no place to put a ground, extra ground.
Yep, then you're rewiring the whole house. Yep.
That's right, but everything was safe and fine, and I don't know if that's against code or not, but anyways.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate your call. You know, you can't put a grounded outlet where there would be if you don't have a ground connection. So, but you know, that brings up a good point. The three-prong outlet certainly makes a better connection in that you've got that extra prong there helping hold it in place. But there's an awful lot of things that are just two prongs, and many of those are not polarized because they don't need to be. Which means, you know, they can go in either way. And so those are rendered, doesn't matter where the ground lug is, top or bottom. If you drop a coat hanger on it, you're going to make the big spark. We got another text here, not to beat a dead horse. Horse ain't dead yet. We keep going. But I heard the reason for the top ground is that a child crawling under a bed, and her necklace drooped down and touched the hot post and she died. I could get that. Somebody just texted, I like the face. Me too. Good morning. You're on The Voice of Maine.
Listen, that horse shouldn't die from electrocution, but here's a story, okay? Mm-hmm. Imagine you've got a loose white wire in your outlet and you're plugging something into it. If it's on top, the ground, that the ground is going to hit first before the hot wire does, so you have a less of a chance of getting a shock.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep.
Yep.
Thank you. But it would seem to me that the ground lug's always a little bit longer than the other two lugs, so it seems to me that would make contact first. Anyway, I don't know. I'm not, you know, I went to college for electrical engineering. And in my last electrical engineering course, I was teetering on the brink of failing. I was not doing well. I know you find that hard to believe. and I knew I was transferring out, and I wasn't going to be anywhere near engineering. And the professor said, I'll tell you what, I will give you a D if you promise never to come back. And I promise. Okay. So I'm going to fast forward just a little bit. I wound up at Rutgers University, New Brunswick, New Jersey. I got a degree in forestry. Okay, I took some design courses, and the whole of the story there. But I was a frustrated engineer, and I found that, you know, 90% engineering, not electrical engineering, but engineering I was interested in, was more mechanical, was arithmetic based. It wasn't differential equations and stuff, which I was struggling with. The guy, I my last semester in school, I had to take two humanities courses. I took them in night school, so I worked during the day. And I was delivery guy for a florist, okay? Traveling around town in New Brunswick, New Jersey, 8 o'clock in the morning, the guy who gave me the D in electrical engineering, I saw coming out of a bar at 8 o'clock in the morning. And I was going to go say, hey, I said, oh, he's coming out of a bar. So dealing with students like me, hey, it would drive you to drink. What can I say? The one of the downfalls of my electrical engineering was the fact, but two downfalls. One is, I know you find this hard to believe, but there were parties in school that didn't help. And two, my first electrical engineering course was taught by two brilliant Chinese electrical engineers. And I didn't understand probably half of what they said, which was frustrating for me. You know, not going to insult the person with, at the time I should have, but I said, you know, I need to be in a different course because I'm having trouble understanding. But the math was, the engineering part, electrical engineering, was comparatively easy. But if you don't start out with a good basis, and I was not bound to be an electrical engineer anyway, although I kind of sometimes make believe I am. Let's see, we got one more thing here. The answer to the guy's question about two-prong receptacles, if you find the first receptacle in line, replace it with a GFI receptacle, you can put three-prong receptacles down the line from it. He was in requirements of NEC. I'm a master electrician, and the reason for a ground prong being on the top side is, in theory, you're going to pull up and out when you unplug something. Most of the time, you're taller than the height of the receptacle. Interesting. All right. Well, I think we've put this one to bed, boys and girls, and we've got some definition, as it were. Interesting question. I'm going to continue to put them in the way I've done, and I'll reap the benefits or the detriments, as it may be. And let's see. Oh, so yeah. So the down at the our place of business on Route 1 in Searsport, last day of the sale of odd things that I've accumulated that I'm no longer needing. And if you're looking for 7 or 7 foot garage door track, brand new, we've got at least 10 sets. So doesn't everybody need garage door track? I think so. We'll see you next week, same time. We might be moved by then. We'll see. Well, that's worth just checking in to see what happens.